Don't forget to like this video, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and hit that little bell for notifications. Welcome back to the Coffee House Podcast, everybody. This is episode 9, I believe, maybe 10. I don't know. I'll go back and edit that later. But today we are here in Deadwood with Todd from the Hills, and they are a vertically integrated cannabis company in South Dakota. So we're going to dive into it. So how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Except for the rain outside. I'm pretty good.
It is pouring rain out there. Glad you stayed a little dry at least.
You made me get out of your truck and run.
Sorry.
So we always kind of start with like background, right? Okay. So like, how did this come to be? How did FTH, like, how did you decide to do all of this?
So FTH was kind of a last minute thing for me personally. I've been in the industry for almost 21 years, pretty long time in the game. Burned out on it, to be honest with you. Didn't want to do this. South Dakota passed the law, and I was already a resident here, living here. And I figured, well, I'm good at what I do. So we developed FTH. Originally, FTH came from, the name actually came from my real estate agent. She's the one who came up with it at the time. And we ran with it, and here we are today.
So your reasoning for being here is marijuana.
Right. Like, not necessarily for you mean being in South Dakota?
Yeah.
No, I've been coming to South Dakota since 2004 for the rally. I'd come every year for the motorcycle rally. I'm a big motorcycle guy. I love to ride, and fell in love with South Dakota. I bought land here early on and then built a house. And then this was where I was going to be full time. And then the laws passed. And so I said, all right, let's do it one more time. So here we are.
Like in the beginning, I mean, I'm sure you still have a lot of this, but like, what hurdles or obstacles have you experienced? Huh. Like the PG version.
So the PG version. That's all pretty much PG for us. My team and I have a couple of my partners are people I've worked with for many years in this industry. We know what it is, what it takes. The biggest hurdles are always your legalities, your compliance, a new state that doesn't know anything. In trying to help educate them as well as people here who know nothing about cannabis or licensed cannabis. So those hurdles can be vast or they could be easy depending on your experience. Most of the people that we've had conversations with in the state have struggled, some not so much, some others have. And it's just based upon your education and how much history you have and how much you're willing to learn from others. I find a lot of people here in South Dakota, they don't want to accept help from anybody. So to each his own and good luck, is what we say.
That's fine. So then that would be the second part of like how would you resolve it? Basically just,
learn. I mean, you learn by doing most of the time. You can't read this stuff in a book. There's no book that will give you a step-by-step on how to be a cannabis company. There's consultants out there. There's a lot of snake oil out there that, a lot of smoke and mirrors. So a lot of my history was transitioning from the black market to the gray market and then the licensed market. And that's where we are today is the licensed market. And it just takes a lot of learning, a lot of doing.
On the job training.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Always on the job training. And it never stops. I mean, as many years as I have, and I don't know everything. I don't. It's impossible. And you can't do it alone.
That's true. Yeah. Everybody's got these great big teams around. So obviously being vertically integrated, like you guys kind of came on the scene a few months ago, but you really made a splash right away. So you're a prime person to talk about industry economics with.
Oof.
So let's try to go through it in like four stages, like supply, then demand, then prices, then like testing.
Okay.
In anywhere. So supply, demand. So I was just at your cultivation facility, which was amazing and incredible.
Thank you.
Obviously, I see that you're making stuff and doing all the things, but getting the product grown and then getting it manufactured and then getting it into dispensaries and then patients' hands, like, can you just take us through that process?
So the state of South Dakota was a little different in the very beginning. And they're an evolving state with cannabis. They're an anti-cannabis state. That's clear. I think everybody knows that. However, they're willing to accept it on certain levels. And that's kind of the biggest thing. So when FTH started out, we kind of knew the industry. We were kind of gambling on rec, but we were also hoping that it didn't pass because it was better for us. Knowing that the state only has now just over 10,000 patients, back then there was only a couple thousand patients, and we were putting together a facility that produces hundreds and hundreds of pounds of cannabis every week. So couple that with your concentrates is how do you sell that? How are we going to make it to market? So our plan set out to establish the grow facility first, in which we did, and establish the concentrates facility, which is the only guy who moved with me from California is my extractor, who's very, very good at what he does. And at that point, once we've established those two entities and trial and error, because it's a new facility, there's a lot of things that go wrong in those first stages. And luckily, again, we've been blessed with a lot of knowledge there. We've done it numerous times. Our learning curve was very little to none. All we had to do is learn our new atmosphere. Our elevation basically was our struggle. So once we started producing, it was, okay, now we have to get it to market, and how do we do that? So as a cannabis company, it's not about the cannabis, really. It's about the brand. It's about brand recognition. That's what people love. And that's what we're, not to say we're the best at, but we're good at what we do. We produce a very good product. We try to get it out to market as many people as we can, and we keep it the same. We keep the brand the same, the look, the feel, everything that you see from dispensary fronts to the product packaging and labeling is always the same along the lines. So what's inside can be always different, but it's always going to be a quality product. So I think I answered your question along the lines there.
I think
I can ramble. You can tell me to shut up anytime.
So. I think your guys' like brand recognition is spot on.
Thank you.
Yeah, like I come from a marketing background, graphics and all of that jazz. So, you know, I'm always like, the next one would be prices. So that's price. One of okay. The maybe stickier things because, you know, there's been a lot of kind of criticism back and forth, that kind of thing. So maybe, you know, why, how do you set the price?
Okay.
What determines that?
So no matter who you are for a cannabis brand, there's always the haters. There's always people that find something wrong. You know, it's just, it could be anything, but there's always something. Most of the time it's pricing. If I was to grow the best cannabis in the state, package it and give it away for free, there would still be people that would complain. So why our prices are the way they are is because it costs a lot of money to do what we do. The misconception is that we're drug dealers and we all make millions of dollars and we're all filthy rich and rolling in dough is so far from the truth, from reality, it's sickening. Because what the consumer who's complaining about a $75 or an $85 vape pen doesn't understand, there's 10,000 people in the state that can buy that product. I have a facility with 26 employees. I have insurance. We have a mortgage. We have a $15,000 electric bill every month, coupled with all of our other facilities and rent and on and on and on. So our payroll is a six-figure payroll every month. So how can I take 10,000 patients and give them a $20 vape pen and survive and stay in business? It's just not physically possible. The economics don't work. So we know prices are high. However, if you shop in Colorado or you shop in California or any other state, you go buy their top-end concentrates, you're still paying $70, $80 a gram for top shelf. And of course, people are going to say, no, that's not true. I can go to XYZ dispensary and buy this brand. Well, that's not the same brand. It's not the same quality. I'll bet any day. I'll put it side by side. So when people talk pricing, it's unfortunate. It is what it is. But at our dispensary level, we have daily specials that cut those prices way down. So I think we sell our vape pens for $75. You know, they're 1 gram live rosin vape pens that test at 80 or 90%. I don't even know what the THC is on those nowadays. So combating pricing can be, is to me the hardest thing in this state right now. Until we get more patients or it goes rec, it is what it is. You're going to see a saturation of product coming with other people coming on market. Everybody's going to try to cut throat and, you know, charge less and less, and that's bad for the industry, you know, as a whole. You'll see people start closing the doors. They just can't make it. So we do what we have to do to be here for you guys.
Yeah, I think, like, personally, when I see a lot of comments, obviously, because I'm always just like a sleuth on the internet at 2 a.m. Like, ooh, what do you got to say? But, you know, one of the things that people certainly do not ever take into consideration is, like, the amount of money that you have invested before you've even started making any product.
Correct.
Like, you know, you got an enormous amount of overhead, and then you've got to pay employees and do all of that stuff. And it's like, it's a lot.
to do what we do from ground zero and come as far as we've come, you know, for us to make profits, I mean, none of us are getting paid except for the employees, but by the time we make profits, we're looking several years down the road before profits are paid to anybody. And that's hopefully if it goes wreck. You know, if it doesn't go wreck, it's going to run by itself, but nobody's making any money. Nobody's making millions of dollars. We're not driving around in Lamborghinis and that kind of crap, you know, so just, it's not real.
Yeah, yeah. I know every time somebody says, like, oh, everybody's just trying to get rich quick, make millions of dollars. Like,
nope.
You have no idea.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
No. No, the legal weed guys are, we're not making any money. We're not doing this for the money, you know, so.
Seems to be a kind of a common, like, theme when I talk to people in the industry, you know, they're like, oh, we have 2 years of no profit built in, you know, to our model because we're not sure, you know, and it's like, well, that's probably a good idea.
No, we built two and then we added two. So thinking about the not going wreck and then waiting for the next vote and the next vote doesn't go our way. I mean, that's another 2 years at least, you know?
Well, I'm on the scene this time. We'll get it done.
Yeah, please. Please.
I throw testing, I guess, into the industry economics just because, like, it's an added cost that obviously it does get passed on to the consumer because it costs money, right? So you've done this in other states.
Correct.
So other states compared to here as far as, like, testing, pricing and, like, profiling, all of that stuff goes, like, how would you?
Night and day difference. And again, I'm going to stand on the side of the lab, and they're in the same boat as us. There's only so many of us for them to cover their monthly expenses. And, you know, the equipment in a testing lab alone, just the equipment is well over $1 million just to buy the equipment. And then you need to pay an expert chemist, you know, he's $250,000 a year because he has a degree, you know, so it's very expensive to run a lab. So they charge us now for their stage one testing, which is, I believe, potency and microbials is $450 per test. So that means every different strain that we have has to be tested. Every different strain of concentrates has to be tested. Every different joint that we have has to be tested. Pretty much everything that you can buy in a package, final form is what it's called, has to be tested. So for us, we test between 5 and 20 products every week at $450 per test. And if you fail that test, now it's a bigger problem. We've been blessed. We've only had issues in the very, very beginning, but we corrected those. In another state, let me back up. So it's $450 now, July 1st, that test goes to $1,100.
Oh.
Per test, yeah.
Is that because of the terpene?
No, or? Not because of terpene. Terpene's an added test that you can do voluntarily. It's not required by state. But what the state is doing on July 1st is they're adding heavy metals and pesticides and, you know, all of the other stuff.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. So in California, that full gamut of tests with a terpene profile cost me $400, period. So there's a night and day difference. But again, he's the only guy in the state. He's got his workload, he's got a lot of workload, but still it's not enough for him to justify cutting his prices at this point. Believe me, I wish he would.
Right.
I mean, the money we spend with him, one of our biggest bills that we pay is because of the testing. So another reason why product that you buy in the store shelves costs what it does, because it's not cheap to do it.
And the terpene testing is an extra cost.
It's I think it's 100 or 150. Don't quote me on that for that end of it, but it gives you a full profile, which is great. We're actually starting to do that now. We're going to be offering that for everything that we do. We're also going to be offering a university. It's the FTH University. where we hold classes and teach people. We'll teach municipalities as well as the general public. Or whoever wants to join a class can do that. There'll be free classes for people. They will not be online because we feel it's better to be in person. So we'll hold them in different variety of places and make it easy for people, but it'll teach.
The recall. You guys recently had
A
recall.
We did.
Yes. Personally, I think that you guys handled it very upfront and very just, boom, here's what happened, guys. Here you go.
Boy, did we get haters for that.
Yes, you certainly did, but I applaud the transparency.
Thank you. Thank you.
So how did it work?
I'll give you the story. So we produced a first batch of gummies, went out. They went out without a hitch. They were great. We ended up recalling those two, but I'll get to that part in a second. Our second batch we produced, and the packaging team realized that the gummies just didn't feel right. They felt a little bit more, not as dry as the first batch, but they went ahead and packaged it anyway, thinking that they would dry. Within 24 hours of them being packaged, they were sent out, and somebody bought one of them, and there was an instant Reddit. Alerted me. I saw that. I called them. We recalled immediately. There was no questions asked. I don't care why or what. Recall. So we did that on our second batch. Third batch went out the next day, which is a completely different batch, the whole nine yards. We had the delivery was made on Thursday, and by, I think, by 10 o'clock it was made. By 11 o'clock, we had him open one package, and there was a little tiny speck. We said, that's it. Call it. So we've now recalled first, second, and third batches of our gummies, and we're not releasing any more. What we've done to combat that in the future is we've now hired a consultant who's very, very good at his recipes, and he's put together our own FTH Now gummy recipe that should go live here, I would think within the next couple weeks we should be able to launch those again. So these will be stronger gummies. They'll be right at the state limit. There'll be
10 milligrams per gummy.
9.99. Not 7.6 or 7.8. And they'll be a much better gummy for the patient for sure. We do apologize wholeheartedly. Like I said, we had that recall in effect within 1 hour of us knowing. So it took time to call everybody, get it done, get it recalled, and just bring it back. So you ask why prices are so high. Can you imagine having to recall all of those gummies now and refund all of that money? So
that actually kind of leads into kind of the next thing. So sure. I didn't realize until right now that like this is a company recall. Like you guys, It's not the state didn't
wasn't the
mandate.
State, no.
This was you guys did this yourselves.
Exactly.
You realized There was a problem.
Yep. That was a must for us. But we started selling in October, November, December, which was just flour, and we were really struggling to get our feet under us, to figure out the facility, to figure out how everything works. And truly, we started really gaining traction in January when we launched our concentrate lines. And then from there, we've just been going as fast as we can, as fast as the market will dictate. How's that?
So you've got a pretty wide variety of things already, mm-hmm. but this is one thing that like older people, especially, constantly are asking me about, like, when are the balms coming out? You know, when are the topicals coming out?
They're coming.
You know, yeah, I ask everybody that, but you know, you're the person to ask.
We have we're going to do that at a regular facility, but we decided to take one of our dispensary locations and turn that into a kitchen. So it's a manufacturing kitchen. We're waiting for licensing with the state right now. Probably 40 to 60 days out on that location, but we'll be making all of our edibles, topicals, tinctures will be coming out of that facility. And it's a white lab coat type kitchen. So it's a pristine application for what the state needs.
Obviously, market is where it is right now.
Right.
Right. But in the future, if we stay medical mm-hmm. or if we go rec, okay, mm-hmm. what do you see happening with each
side of that?
Side?
If it stays medical, you're going to see half to three quarters of the businesses now leave and close their doors just because they all plan on rec. If it goes recreational, you'll see the market explode. You'll see a saturation of more growers, more, everybody will flood the state to come and try to make their millions. But all that does is drive prices down to the very, very bottom, and everybody loses at that point. So rec's dangerous to the industry unless it's regulated correctly, and no state has figured out how to do that. And it's really not that hard. They're not listening to people who know, is the bottom line. So
yeah, I think, was it Colorado? You see that on the news all the time, how it's like, oh, it's an, you know, $100 for an ounce or whatever, mm-hmm. some crazy low price, you know, because the market basically bottomed out.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Like, that's essentially what happened. Mm-hmm. They just opened it up too fast or yep. too much.
Too much.
Yeah.
Is what it is. Too much product. And then, you know, this state doesn't understand. They see tax dollars and revenue. When they embrace it, that's what they want to do. And they say, okay, open 2,000 different cultivation facilities. We don't care. Doesn't matter how big. Which, what they're not understanding is they're just destroying the industry by doing that.
It's easy to talk about the negative, negative mm-hmm. stuff, right? It's easier to complain. But what are some of the positive, I guess, things that you see right now and that you see in the future, especially compared to, you know, the work you've done in other states?
You know, the positive thing is we're bringing something new to South Dakota that's, you know, cannabis users in the day, and I'm still do, I'm sure they still do, are black market shoppers typically. You don't know what you're smoking. You don't know what you're ingesting. A lot of those kind of growers that are using PGRs are using things that you shouldn't be smoking, but it makes fire flower, you know? So the positives are, by going into a licensed realm, you're getting a much cleaner product. Our testing is more stringent than any other food or nicotine or any other testing in the world. Cannabis is most scrutinized, most tested. So you know you're getting clean product. So especially after July 1, I mean, the testing is insane. It's 100-fold worse than cigarettes. So positive, you're getting a way cleaner product, way better for your health, way better for your ailments. The stuff that we're implementing coming up soon, you know, we're showing the terpene testing, what's good for this, what's good for that. So that's all huge stuff. You know, it's great for patients. So the other thing, and I might as well just announce it here with you today, we're going to be doing, I'm a little choked up on this one. My son developed a program years ago, and it's free cannabis to the terminally ill patients. So that's going to go live, I think, August, either August or September. We haven't put a date out, but if you're terminally ill, we're going to give you free meds. So that's going to be FTH stuff only.
That's the FTH medical program. Is
yes.
that what it's going to be
yeah.
called?
Yeah, it'll be the Daniel Ross Medical, what's it called? The Daniel Ross Medical Program is what it'll be called. Something along those lines. So I'm gonna name it after my son.
People forget about the terminally ill.
Yeah.
And how it is, it's difficult for them to access it to begin with. And then
correct.
It's also expensive. Like, you know, I was thinking about that actually the other day, and I was like, man, I'd be so sad. Like, I just personally, I don't think I could handle that emotionally. So
it's tough. It's really tough. And I got a little choked up. You know, my son passed away a couple of years ago, and he was a rock star. And he came up with that program because one of my patients back in the day, he would come in a wheelchair. His wife would push him in every day. And, you know, they would always try to find the cheapest stuff that they can find. And my son caught on to that. He said, no, let me give you this. So fast forward, maybe 8-10 months later, his wife had come in. She brought a letter that he had written. He was a retired DEA agent. And he thanked us up and down. We made his life, you know, way better, blah, blah, blah. So that's how that was born, the whole thing.
Wow, that's crazy. So, retired DEA agent. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Some of the cool stuff is we've treated children before with mass seizures. That's you know, another reason why I love this industry is that's probably the only reason why I love it is the health benefits. But I had a colleague's child who was having 20, 30, 50 seizures a day. This poor little, she's 12 years old, poor little girl, just a miserable life. And I begged him, let me treat her. And I got her on Charlotte's Web and some other CBD stuff. And we knocked her seizures down to maybe one a month and then eventually none. And that little girl came in, needed a big hug and thanked me. And it's cool.
I've heard a lot about the seizure stuff. Another one that I'm really curious about is the autism stuff. Because I know there's kind of a lot of new research, seeing where that goes.
The autism side is cool too. We've treated several. some of the more violent ones, themselves and other people, and they're just dangerous to everybody. We've treated several of those and have stopped that entirely just by giving them the right mix of, you know, terpene or CBD mixtures, and it's a tremendous health benefit for them alone. So.
I know a child who like has autism, so it's like
it's a big deal.
Yeah, it works. I could see trying to use that. So I've been out here for 2 days now, and I've noticed some interesting distinctions between the east side and the west side of the state. So one big thing, the west side, there's a lot more camaraderie. Mm-hmm. Like in the industry, there's a lot more fun, and okay, people are more okay with it out here. One of the most interesting things, though, I think that I've found while I'm out here is walking into the dispensaries. You guys keep people in the waiting area, mm-hmm, and only allow one patient back at a time. Could you walk us through, like, what are some of the ramifications, or like, why is it that you do just one person?
If FTH, we choose to do it because it is a medical market. If you think about going to a pharmacy, when have you ever stood next to somebody in line at the same register, totally different people getting prescriptions? It doesn't happen. And there's a reason for that. It's called HIPAA. It's a HIPAA violation. So we choose to give a one-on-one interaction with a patient. Is our bud tender will go get the patient from the front, bring them inside, assist them, talk to them about their ailments, and whatever it may be, give them what they want, and out the door they go. If you have a room full of people here, they all get to hear what you're complaining about or what your ailment is, which is technically illegal. So stores that do that, they are opening themselves up for a potential lawsuit because some patient's going to get pissed off, and then there's going to be a HIPAA violation. Now, if it's in a rec market, it's a different feel. Come on in, enjoy the music, hang out. I mean, that's a rec market. In medical's a different realm. So
especially when you're dealing with a lot of older people.
Correct. Yeah.
Who don't really know so much. Yeah.
A lot of people are still scared. It's still taboo for them. You know, they're reefer madness from way back in the day. You know, so for this, some of those people are very, I don't want anybody to know I'm even in the store. You know, they walk in with, you know, dark sunglasses, a big hat on, you know, that kind of thing. So
another thing that I've noticed, but this is a thing that happens on both sides of the state, the deli style versus the prepackaged.
Correct. Yes.
So yeah. Why do you choose prepackaged rather than doing deli style?
The list is very long on why we do prepackaged. To me personally, as a business owner, it is very unprofessional. Second, it's unsanitary. To me, you're dealing with theft. You're dealing with the sanitation level of it all. Just on and on and on. When you go into a store or to a pharmacy, do you ever see the guy weighing out your pills in front of you? I mean, you may if they're run out or something, and there's a guy with a white lab coat counting them out somewhere, different story. Or somebody say, here, smell this jar of weed, you know, is just, it's not professional, it's not healthy, it's not clean. It also, all of the weed in the big jars is drying out super fast. So when people get a product and now it's dry, and let's just say it's our brand, they complain because, oh, your weed's dry. No, it's not because of us. We gave that guy great weed. He chose to put it in a jar, which dried it out. So
I was thinking it's kind of weird to watch them like take stems off or something like
that. Yeah, exactly. They're handling your medicine. It should be already trimmed and ready to go in a package. It shouldn't be this guy trimming in front of you and then putting it on the scale and, you know, weighing it, you know. And then you have the other issue is the theft issue of it. If, you know, your bud tender is a great bud tender and his girlfriend or boyfriend come in and family, whatever, and all of a sudden that eighth now weighs 5 grams and nobody knows because that's what he did. You know, there's so many different ways to mess with the scale and the reading on it to say you're compliant, but that guy just got hooked up and he just stole from you, you know, so.
Right, and this is a question you can probably answer. So with metric,
yes,
that's another thing that confuses me as to how you could do the deli style versus prepackaging, because how do you keep your count on or accurate?
There's a lot of waste in those stores, let's just say. And waste is one way of it fell on the floor, 10 grams waste. You know, that's one way around it. You know, that's the most common way. The other way is, you know, you go into Metric and you change your inventory and you say, we made a mistake. We're changing our inventory because we miscounted or whatever it may be. So Metric gives you room to do that where it really shouldn't on the dispensary level. It should be a tighter quality or quantity check for Metric purposes there.
So another thing mm-hmm. that's very interesting out here versus on the east side of the state. So Sioux Falls, the east side in general, mm-hmm. there is a war going on between the dispensaries and the smoke shops.
Oh yeah.
And over the Delta 8 and the CBD and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And out here it seems a little bit more mellow about that, maybe because there's more touristy stuff, but how do you feel about that?
Okay, so here's my belief on Delta 8. It is literally crap in my opinion. The federal government's been talking about banning it for a long time now. There's been lots of talks, a lot of lobbyists keep going back and forth and try to beat them down on it. We still have it. Deadwood banned it. You can't buy it in Deadwood, which is great. I applauded them. Good job. As far as the smoke shops go, selling that kind of stuff, it's a huge revenue stream for those guys. It's guys who don't want to go get a medical card, can get high on Delta 8. They go to a head shop and get it, and they're still getting high. You know, the state thinks, oh no, you can't get high because of how it's tested or whatever the reasoning is. But it's hemp based typically. You're still getting high from it. It's still a euphoric effect, but the state is just blind to it. They just let it go because there's so much money behind it. Case in point, there is a particular gentleman company here is a large oil company. They own a ton of gas stations and they do sales of just Delta 8 in the millions. So how are you going to combat that? You got big oil that sells it in their stores, lobbying the state to keep it because that's one of their revenue streams. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, it's bad for the body. I don't think anybody should ingest that stuff. It's not good. So
I think, was it like in Colorado, I was kind of digging into mm-hmm. how it's made and things like that. And mm-hmm. There was hemp farmers, right, who basically were like, well, this saved our farm, right? The whole Delta 8 thing.
Yeah.
But isn't CBD from hemp also?
CBD does come, you can get CBD out of hemp. And I'm not an expert on this side of things. So I speak out of turn. If I'm wrong, I'm sure somebody will call me out online on it. But the hemp is a good product for a good plant for a lot of different reasons. Smoking is just not one of them, in my opinion. CBD, to be effective in the body, truly be effective, you need a delivery system. The only way it gets delivered to you effectively is with THC. So having hemp-derived CBD versus cannabis-derived CBD, it's two different animals. It's always a better product when it's cannabis-derived, for sure.
Actually, that kind of maybe brings me to my next question. But I don't know if you'll know or not. So the Delta 8 or CBD mm-hmm. stuff, if it's hemp-based, does it interact with the cannabinoid system the same way that, like, THC, like, marijuana?
From my understanding, it's two different animals. It acts differently in the body because it's two different entities at the end of the day. So I could be wrong on that, but I don't think so.
I don't think so either. See, yeah. Politicians, that's one for you guys. That's for you guys. honestly, I think, so I was a supporter of them raising the hemp percentage mm-hmm. For one simple reason, but I just think hemp is going to be the next big cash crop. And South Dakota is a prime location to grow it. And I think that farmers, they need a good amount of leeway in order to get them growing it. Because if they've been growing corn for 100 years and then you ask them to plant a new crop, right? But they don't know, right?
Yeah. I feel learn like something
it's,
new
and... it's okay. Give them some rope and then scale it back.
Yeah.
So when that got turned down, I was a little bit sad about that. But you being actually on the inside of the industry, you probably have a different opinion. How did you feel about that?
The hemp in general is great for a lot of different things, but it's not good for smoking or ingesting, in my opinion. And again, this is just my opinion, not FDH. We don't we stay neutral.
Yep.
But my opinion is just that. You can make everything with it. I mean, Corvette was experimenting with making their new fiberglass bodies made out of hemp. I mean, there's a lot of different things. If you go way back in the Viennese time when hemp was here, it was used for everything. I mean, hemp was everything, clothing and everything. You know, and then big ag came and politics and politicians and ruined all of that. So I believe there's a market for hemp. It's just not in the medical or ingestible side of things. I'm just, you can get a better product using cannabis.
Yeah, no, I agree on that front for sure. I just feel like for them to grow hemp that's going to be made into something, you got to give them a little bit of like room to wiggle.
I agree with that.
But
yeah,
also, I don't know how you regulate that, like what's being sold to production and what's being sold to make into other ingestible things. So
it's just a matter of another compliance, you know, entity that supersedes it. You know, if there's a farmer, he has 1,000 acres of hemp. It goes to here, you know, or wherever. Somebody has to, there's got to be some sort of somebody looking at it, because if not, then you're going to find it in the black market. You're going to find it everywhere else. So, but hemp is so widely available. It's insane. The prices on hemp have dropped. This damn fly. Hemp used to be, you know, $1,500, $2,000 a pound. You can buy hemp now for $100, $200 a pound. It's very cheap because there's so much of it.
Wow. Yeah. What are they using that for? Is to make the Delta 8 stuff?
A lot of it was Delta 8. A lot of it was CBD products. And this is going back, you know, 10, 15 years ago now. There was a big push on hemp for CBD, and because you didn't need a cannabis store to do it. The Delta 8 stuff was another big push. You know, that's still here now, but that needs to go away, I think.
I think there's a lot of people that agree with you, especially in the industry. So,
and those of you like Delta 8, I'm sorry. I have nothing against you, or I just think it's bad.
I think my issue with it is just the fact that like, it doesn't have to go through any testing or anything.
Correct.
There's no rules.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, you don't know. Yep. Like marijuana has been tested very thoroughly before it hits the shelves, right? And all that stuff. You don't know. I mean, they could just be putting filler in there or something that'll make you sick. You don't
know. The pesticides that they're using, I mean, Delta 8. If you wanted to keep Delta 8, you'd have to put the same requirements on it as you do cannabis. That's the only way to keep it. And if they did that, there would be no Delta 8, because there's just, you can't grow hemp outdoors without treating it for bugs and everything else. It doesn't work.
Right.
And to grow it indoors, it's not a big enough footprint. You'd need a massive Walmart-style facility just to supply a little bit of product.
The dispensaries are condensed into like a smaller area out here. So it's like in Deadwood, there's what, 2 or 3 of them? And then in Rapid City, there's like 5.
Here in Deadwood, there's 2. There's our store and then one of our competitors. And then we have another store on the other side of Deadwood in Lee. So I believe there's another one going to open here in Deadwood. But on the other side of the state, it's more wide open. You know what I mean? So that's why you see what you see. It's kind of going back to the California, Colorado mentality. You know, the busy cities, there's a dispensary every 100 yards. You know, it is what it is.
Well, I was just shocked when I was planning trip out here and stuff, you know, and I'm looking at the map and I see all these dots in Rapid City. And what? Because in Sioux Falls, we only have 3 in city limits.
Yeah.
That's all. But I mean, I think there's one more opening in city limits in the future. But. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. Otherwise, you got to go to Hartford, T, Brandon, whatever. You know, each little town gets to have one type
exactly.
of a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and out here, there's like 5 dispensaries in Rapid City. Like,
well, they have 17 licenses. There's eventually going to be, you know, 17 stores there. But the population there, in my opinion, there should have only been maybe 10 stores allowed because of the population. We base your footprint upon population. So the way the cities should really look at putting licenses out there, it's kind of like how Deadwood did it, is by ordinance, by zoning. So you have to be so many feet from everything, and that's it. If you can find a building in that location, great, you can open. Cap it, though. You know, there should be a cap, because it's like Rapid City, you can put ordinances like they did, the green zone, but there's so many buildings in the green zone. There's tons of them, you know, so different ways of doing it.
One thing that we talk about on the podcast quite a bit, especially with dispensaries or people on other side of the state, mainly just because this is my first time out here, is the fact that how the state allocated licenses is kind of like they did it expecting it to be a rec market, but it became a medical market. So there's just too many out there. type of a thing. Do you feel like the state maybe erred a little bit there and like handing out too many?
Well, it wasn't really the state. So the state said, okay, we're going to allow this, but we're going to let the county or the city determine just how many. So it was really up to them. It wasn't up to the state. The state just said, okay, we'll allow it, but we'll leave it up to the city to make the ordinances. And if the city didn't put in an ordinance by a certain time frame, then it fell under state ordinances. The city or county could have said, no, we don't want it, and then it was done. So the state had really nothing to do with it. It's more city or county based that set those rules.
All right, so last okay. thing, you've been a trooper. Sure.
She thanks.
So we kind of skipped this, probably add this back in. Okay. But terpenes coming online, this mm-hmm. it's a big deal. I think it is. I think a lot of people in the industry think it's a big deal. Patients do, but people on the outside maybe don't quite understand why.
True.
And, you know, even, like, I don't really know what they are. So give us like a brief overview of what they are and why they matter.
So in cannabis, there are a tremendous amount of what they call terpenes, right? Each terpene has a different effect on the body. And this is not my department. Growing is not what I do, so it would be best to talk to one of my growers who can explain this in detail. But at the end of the day, terpene testing is becoming a bigger and bigger thing because it will tell you exactly what's in that strain, what it'll do for you personally, and it helps the patient actually decide better as to what product to choose from off your shelf. So that's the nutshell version of it. If you want the technical version, you got to go ask one of my guys. So, and on Saturday, you can.
Yeah, I be there. So terpenes, obviously, you know, that's a added testing cost. We kind of went over that. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's some people who think that it's going to make this big change in the market.
No.
But personally, I don't see that.
Yeah.
What are your feelings?
It's not going to change the market in any way. It just helps educate the patients more is all it's going to do, which is a good thing. I mean, I'm all for it. It's something that everybody should do selling medicine. You should be able to know what's in it and what it does. Without the 90 million side effects of regular drugs.
So. You need to go back and watch the episode with BJ. he was talking about commercials on TV and how they can do all the crazy things, at the end. It's funny.
My wife and I are going to do a game, like a game, you know, name the drug. And there's so many. Every commercial is a drug now. Are you kidding me?
So funny. Yeah, the United States is one of the only countries that allows that.
Yeah.
Nuts, but you can't even have a marijuana leaf on your side.
Exactly right. You know.
Thank you for coming on the show mm-hmm. and bringing me around today.
You're welcome.